The European Institute of Innovation and Technology is an initiative that promotes innovation and entrepreneurship across Europe. They work, amongst other things, across health, environment, manufacturing, and of course, food, driving innovation and collaboration and providing investment where it's most needed, which is at the beginning of a startup's journey. We're talking today to Marie Brousser, Corporate Venture Manager at EIT Foods. She tells us about the focus on protein diversification and regenerative agriculture, and also what this means for the future of food. I'm Alex Crisp, and welcome to another episode of Future of Foods Interviews. You can find us on Substack, and please subscribe in order to stay up to date with all new releases and other useful content. So welcome, Marie Brousser, who is Corporate Venture Manager at EIT Food. EIT Food is one of the largest innovation communities building a future-fit, sustainable and healthy food system. Could you tell us a little bit more about you and also about EIT Food? Because we might not all have heard of who you are.
Very happy to, first of all. So thank you for having me here. Really excited to be here today. So my name is Marie, as we've just heard. I'm a corporate venture manager. What that means is that I connect corporates and startups to set up collaborations. And I do that within the big ecosystem that EIT Food offers. So EIT Food is co-funded by the European Union to drive innovation in the food system. We just heard all the big words that are within that, so let me make that a little bit more tangible. We tackle this from various different angles, including, for example, we co-fund innovation projects. We work with teachers, for example, to teach also the youngest in our ecosystem about the food system. But we also have online training courses for adults. We also work a lot with startups, which of course you'll hear more about today. So we have three startup support programs for really early stage innovators, an accelerator, and then a scale-up support program that is really personalized called Rising Food Stars. And finally, we do a lot also with public engagement. We also work then towards the European Commission to kind of echo from what we hear within our ecosystem. And our ecosystem is made up of our partners. Our partners join EIT Food, a member of our organization, and these are big and small corporates, universities, research institutes, NGOs, and really anybody that touches the food system in some way. So that's a little bit, in a very quick way, about EIT Food and what we do.
So, EIT Food, you say they are partly funded by the EU. Who else funds them? If they're partly funded by the EU, who else do they get money from?
Yep. So we're co-funded by the EU, but we work in all of Europe. So just in terms of the geographic scope, it's very much the geography of Europe. So from, I like to say, from Iceland to Israel and everything in between. Our funding also comes from the membership fees. So you pay to be a partner of EIT Food and then can unlock other opportunities within that. And then we also have a lot of regional projects, for example. So I'm based in Munich in Germany. And so we have a grant, for example, from the Bavarian government to drive innovation in this part of Germany. So that's then localized approaches. And so we have various more localized activities, or localized grants coming from different sources.
Okay. And so the EU money, is that Horizon money?
Yeah, so we're in the umbrella of the EIT, the European Institute for Innovation and Technology. Mm. And then within that, we're just one of the so-called EITs. So we're EIT Food. There's also EIT Raw Materials, EIT Energy. So lots of different ones driving innovation in their ecosystems. So we're here for the food system, but it does also then lean back to Horizon money, yes.
Okay. So you're talking about how you help new companies, exciting food technologies. So can you share some of the most exciting of those new food technologies and innovations that you've helped or seen emerge recently?
Yeah, happily. Because of my role, because I do this corporate startup matchmaking, I then get to see a really big breadth of that ecosystem. But also, Yeti Food gets more than 1,000 applicants every year, so we really get a good feel for what's out there. I think what's exciting me personally right now is a lot of what can be done with kind of generative AI or just the larger data crunching that we can do, right? Of course, ChatGPT came out almost 2 years ago now. But we're seeing now startups come up with innovations within that and using that to actually also solve problems. And so I think on the agriculture side, there's a lot happening in plant genetics, plant breeding. So I think that's having a little bit of a revival since we can crunch a little bit more data, more information, and put that together and get outputs faster. We can also turn that into then faster breeding technologies, faster varieties in the market. I think also data can be used then on the food side to, for example, substitute ingredients or bring in new flavors because you can do a lot of the work online to kind of figure out what things will taste like or what mixes will be really good, will be nutritious and delicious. And so we also have then a lot of supporting technologies within that space. For example, precision fermentation, we can agree is a technology that's here to stay. It's being used a lot in the alternative protein products. But we're now having startups that help map out what happens in that fermenter so that we can get a lot faster to where we want to be, plan that a lot better, obviously cutting costs, but also time. So I think those around there, I get quite excited. I think we'll wait and see how that plays out because now it's kind of the small ones have a chance to dive into this a little bit further, a little bit earlier. And the question is, what will it look like in a few years when they need data to keep growing the models, but then a lot of the data sits within those big corporates, for example, that may not want it to be mixed with others. So we'll see how that plays out. But I think that's exciting right now. And to leave the digital realm as well, I think bioinputs, a lot is happening there on the agriculture side. And then on the food side, it's new ingredients, especially kind of sugar alternatives, fat alternatives. So going away from palm oil, for example. And chocolate alternatives as well. I think we're seeing exciting things that taste really good as well.
Okay, so you are working a lot with startup companies. So what are the key qualities that you look for when selecting a startup to support?
So Yeti Food has three startup programs, right? So we start really early with seed beds or incubators. So these are teams that aren't necessarily registered yet. So a lot of master student, PhD students. So we have a lens there on always throughout everything we do is that technology component. So something novel that hasn't been done before, possibly protectable or ideally protectable. And something, yeah, something new. Obviously, sustainability and impact at the heart of it as well. So we have that early stage one, then we have an accelerator, EIT Fan. Where it's really kind of that next level up. And then that personalized support system in the Rising Food Stars, where it's really around raising that Series A, scaling internationally, and getting a lot of visibility in the ecosystem. So within that, it's always about a great team, the people behind it, that they understand the problem, that you can feel the passion they have to solve that problem, but also with a technology that makes sense, that is affordable, that's exciting, and that's novel. So I think that's kind of what we look for.
Okay. So how do you help the new startups? I mean, you said you've talked about scale up and you've talked about kind of getting the news out and all of that sort of thing. So are you like a sort of administrative support, or are you more kind of linking them to people who might help them? How do you help
Yeah,
them?
so it's for sure we're linking people, we're also giving knowledge, so there's a lot there. All our programs, like everything we do at EIT Food, we do with our partners. So we have a great ecosystem coming in. So as soon as a startup has been accepted, which is quite a journey, as they get looked at by various experts, and then are invited for interviews as well. But we support around 120 startups in those three programs that I mentioned every year. They get support in terms of sessions and knowledge. They get connections to both research institutes and universities, but also corporate partners. And then, of course, also the investment piece. So we, as EIT Food, we can invest. Our pipeline is the startups in our programs. So that's kind of that first step. But then we can invest in them. So that's from our side, but also, of course, the ecosystem that comes behind it. It then gets quite specific, depending on what program you're in. So Seedbed is focused a lot on that market discovery. So finding what is that problem, what does the business model look like, and then that support, and what does it look like to even to be a startup, to run a startup, as almost half of the companies we support are not registered yet within that program. And then I think if I can share a little bit more about our accelerator, that one is set up a little bit differently, and I think really excitingly, because it brings those strengths of our ecosystem together. So what we do there is the startups throughout the programs work on their tech validation. So instead of in most other programs, at the end, you pitch an investor pitch. For us, you pitch your tech validation. So that's whatever you need to go from where you are to that next level. So that can be a field trial, that can be scaling production, that can be trying out a new formulation. And we connect you to research institutes and universities in our ecosystem that might be able to do that with you. And we then actually also give out grants to some of the startups. So the top three get funding to actually do that. And so that obviously drives that faster route to market as well. So that's a really nice one. And then visibility, yes. So we take our startups to events, we help them have booths. We also then help position them in terms of interviews, programming, and of course our own events as well.
Okay. So it's sort of an all round kind of assistance. So when you said you can invest in the companies, now obviously as corporate venture manager, that's a part that you play. How much can you invest in the startups?
And so it's actually not in my team. So our corporate venturing team is really around just the collaboration with corporates. We have our investment team that drives this. So we invest using SAFEs, right? So these are convertible notes, somewhere between 500K and 1.5 million. And that can be a bridge round, that can be a seed to Series A. But we don't really go beyond that. We might do follow on exact. Follow-on investments as well, but it's really that's kind of the realm we work in. And then again, it's our ecosystem that we can bring in, right? So then we connect you to really raise that follow-on round as well. So it's really that support that comes in there.
And do you take any equity interest in the companies that you invest in then when you invest money?
When that convertible note converts, then yes. So at first, right, it's the safe is you get the money, and then when they raise a significant round after that, that then converts into equity. So yes.
Okay, so what are some of the biggest challenges the food industry faces today, and how are you helping them bridge? Overcome that.
A very big question, Alex.
Yeah.
So I think for us, what we of course we've done, we've mapped the ecosystem, we've looked at the challenges, and then we also thought, okay, where can we help? Where can we really drive things that have that high impact, and where our ecosystem is really in a good place to drive that? So that's the ecosystem very much also beyond the startups. So we've identified three priorities for us. They're still quite broad, as you'll hear now. And so one is protein diversification, which is broad. But it's of course, driving plant-based food. That is nutritious, delicious, affordable, better for the environment, obviously also a fair payment within that. So it's really that whole package around it. So that's a big one. I think the other one we have is regenerative agriculture, because we see a huge lever there. We often hear how agriculture is the problem, but it's also the solution. And so we think that regenerative agriculture is a big topic here that will make a huge impact, obviously on the countryside, on the land that is being used, on the farmers and their income, but also in the end for the consumers, right? We're having studies come out now that to show that the nutritional properties of those foods might actually be different, might be better for you. So really driving regenerative agriculture has impacts all across the food system. So that's a big one. And then packaging as well is our third one that we've kind of taken on to really drive forward, because we see that huge impact in there. I'm sure there's many other challenges, or there are, but those are three that we really said, okay, we're going to drive these. We're building consortia around it. We're bringing in the power of our ecosystem to really do something.
So do you now clearly there's going to be some conflict between traditional agriculture and new biotechnology that is available, kind of producing alternative proteins like sort of cultivating cells, meats and milk and that sort of thing. Do you are you is part of what you do to sort of help kind of level this ground and kind of control the narrative in some way that you know so that it's seen in a positive way for farmers rather than in a you know in a sort of negative way?
Yes. So I would say we don't control any narrative, right? We hear what we hear, and we help guide that. But we're not a lobby organization or anything like that. But for us, I think what you raise several things within that question. So one, of course, CELAG, will it replace farming the way we do today? What do those dairy farmers, for example, do? So I think there we have different approaches to this, and of course, there are some that are driving this to diversify the income for farmers, right? So instead of saying this is competing, it's a way to diversify income. And we've actually seen quite a few farmers that are excited by that idea, by that possibility to diversify their income, by then also maybe having a facility for CELAG on their farm itself. So I think these things are not necessarily as, black and white or as opposed as sometimes they're made out to be. One thing we're doing directly is always is that connection, bringing people together, talking about it and seeing what we can do. And especially around here, we have the alternative or the protein diversification think tank. And so that think tank brings in different actors. And I'll name a few so that you get a feel for how different they are. So there's Danone in there, right? It's really big dairy, of course, really big brand. GFI, so the Good Food Institute, obviously is driving all sorts of plant-based. But then you also have Mossa Meats in there. So obviously Mossa Meat in the CELAG space, Onego Bio, which is also a startup scale-up, alternative egg ingredients. So you really have these different players coming in. Puratos, Roquette, Le Saffre, you have universities and research institutes like the DIL in Germany, Lund in Sweden, VTT in Helsinki in Finland. So it's bringing those different perspectives, different ideas, connecting them to each other. And their output of the think tank are then also policy recommendations. So they took their discussion into the European Commission, sat down with the MEPs, and made some specific recommendations on how policy can drive a shift here, how it can support this transition. So we're really connecting different players, and that's what we do. So it's less of our voice, it's really we're that convener, bringing those people together.
Interesting. So is the name of that the Protein Diversification Think Tank, or has it got a snappier name, or is that
It is that. We're not known for our snappiness, but when you think of it, I mean, it's pretty much the words that you would use to Google anyway. You can Google it and you'll find it. So yes, it is exactly that. Maybe that's in the works.
I will
I'll recommend it.
have to look at them and try and get somebody on a future episode. So,
Happy to
okay,
connect you.
good. Looking at plant-based food. So, how does EIT view plant-based food as part of the food solution? You've mentioned a few companies. Is this a big part of the future?
Yes, is the short answer. I think it
We
is.
have consumers lost trust in plant-based because of obviously there was a lot of noise about it, and then some say that the bubble burst at some point.
No, you're quite right. So, as I mentioned, alternative proteins is one of our three big things. So, as EIT Food, we think, yes, this is here to stay. It has to be driven forward as well. And so we funded various projects. We have the think tank. So there's the various ways we're driving this. I think in terms of obviously we can talk about the startups in this space, which has also reached, like the general media, because of course those big names that came out at the beginning, with Beyond Burgers, and Right, we saw their numbers go down and kind of crumble. We also saw a lot of startups raising huge rounds in 2020, 2021, and them now not being able to raise those follow-on rounds. So I think the information there that you get is rather negative. What you don't see is that the companies that taste good, that are nutritious, that have figured out a way to scale this in a way that actually we can buy, they're doing okay. Right, they have managed to find ways to keep going, and any companies now, and this is especially true for Europe where we are, they are actually getting investment that is a lot more true to their stage because numbers were inflated a lot at the beginning of 2020, 2021. So they were getting way more money than they could actually kind of deal with, and that raised then those concerns in the follow-on rounds versus now where it's a lot more realistic. And so I think companies now are. Have learned from what we saw, things are more delicious, more nutritious, but trust is a big one. So, of course, also during the pandemic years, people tried this, it didn't taste good, they're not coming back. So, that's a challenge. Communication is key. We've actually done a study, so we have a trust tracker at EIT Food that asks 200,000 people in 18 countries their opinion every year. On trust and the food system. What we found in there is that actually not that many are open to new food products as a whole. So a third, one third, is open to trying new food products. So that leaves two thirds that are not that enthusiastic, especially if it's seen to be like industrial, unnatural. You know, we keep seeing like ultra processed. So those are some of the perspectives out there. And yes, that is a challenge we need to overcome.
Well, the media has kind of gone heavy on these companies, on the kind of on the ultra processed foods. They sort of, you see it quite often. I've actually written about this, but it's they're kind of comparing some donuts and cakes with wholemeal bread and calling them all ultra processed foods. But what also comes in that is the plant-based foods quite often that kind of don't have all the added sugars and salts necessarily, but they are more health foods than more healthy foods than but people, because of the classification limitations, people tar them all with the same brush, don't they? So it's a bit of a problem.
But then, I mean, you're seeing kind of clean label was the buzzword. I'm not sure if it's still riding that wave. Maybe it's just over its peak. But that was what everybody was talking about, right? And we wanted, I
Clean
think, also
label.
many consumers. Sorry?
I'm sorry, what did you say? Clean label.
Yeah, clean label. Yeah. So that you, right, consumers wanted to understand what's in their food. You look at your drinks, your food, you want to understand what's in there. Even if obviously in your plant-based meat, you might have beetroot to make it red. Well, that's fine to understand what it is versus some chemical that I've never heard. So I think that is still there. That is still like continuing. How many consumers actually read the label, I don't know. But I think it's a good wave that we are riding where we are looking at how can we make our products be more natural, if you want
Yeah,
to put it that way.
and
Yeah.
tastier. I mean, I've
That too.
experienced it myself because I did a couple of years ago. I did try quite a lot of the plant-based stuff, and it wasn't very appetizing. It just didn't really live up to the hype. And but recently, there's been some products which I would say are fabulous. But I suppose people have been bitten by it and kind of thought, no, why would I pay more for something which is kind of sub quality?
Yeah, and that is another thing, right? Spending power has gone down. I think pretty much everywhere in Europe, inflation has come in, so we're less likely to spend a little bit extra to try this plant-based thing, which kind of we already know is not going to taste as great. So sales have gone down because of that as well. So totally agreed. I think one thing, and that's me personally, I'm intrigued to see whether we're going to get hybrid meat products, and we definitely need to rename that one. But you know, where you have less meat in a product, because then you can still have that delicious taste, that cooking, like same way of cooking, it changes color, you understand when it's ready, but at the same time you're reducing the amount of meat in that
Yeah,
sizable chunk.
and there's many ways of having hybrid products, I suppose. You can have the kind of precision fermented oils that are kind of animal proteins kind of added to the plant-based foods. And then you can have kind of cultivated food hybrids, and then you can actually have real meat hybrids, I suppose, can't you? So there's and so there's a whole, you know, there's a whole kind of there's a whole kind of revolution of food yet to come.
Yes, and we're on the cusp of it,
We are.
and possibly we'll be the last to try it here in Europe. But they're coming, and they're scaling. So as long as we can actually bring the prices down, gonna be good.
So are you hearing words at EIT that there is some power or influence behind the way that this food is received by consumers, how it's perceived by consumers? Is there any sort of media push or, you know, kind of money behind sort of cultivated foods and stuff like that? Because lots of consumers either have never heard of it, or they are just against the concept of it. And there clearly needs to be some education in this field.
Yeah.
Is EIT involved in any way with that sort of thing?
We possibly are, because we do a lot.
Right.
What I can say is that it is needed for sure. And that through our trust tracker and through those interviews we do with those people is that we understand that first of all, the willingness to try new things is quite low. The understanding of what they are is even lower. But then also in general, we found that actually only 45% of Europeans have trust in the food that they eat. So that's related to the taste, to the safety, to the health, as well as to the sustainability of the food system. So that's quite a low number. And that's not just alternative proteins. That's the whole, when we think of our food, only 45% of them are really sure that it is done in the best way for us. And I think that's a big one to tackle. And I think even fewer. So when you just look at the sustainability angles, 36% of people trust that the food is being produced in the most sustainable way. So I think there's big things to move along here. At the same time, it's also a question of who drives the messages. So again, in our studies, we find farmers are the most trusted, and then actually government agencies are the least trusted. So that's national, regional, EU level. Farmers are the highest. Government agencies are the lowest. So should we be talking about it? Absolutely, because we have the data, but can we do it in the way that actually reaches people? We need a whole group on board.
I mean, statistics are a difficult thing to really, you know, to really kind of grapple with, aren't they? Because, you know, farmers can sort of take on any kind of guys. You know, you have your sort of family farm, and then you have your industrial farms, you know, kind of run by billionaires or something.
Yeah, oh, we're grouping. We're being very grouping is one study, but it is a lot of people that fit into that. But yes, things need to be done. I think communication is key. And then I think you mentioned it earlier as well, where you know things like, oh, you've been doing this wrong, let's fix that, or let's make it different. It's more, you know, let's build on what you're already doing so that it's more nutritious for you. And so we actually, when looking at regenerative agriculture, we also saw that, well, you should really talk about the nutrition at the end for the person, why it's better for the consumer, that one individual person like you and me, why it makes sense for us to put our money there in the supermarket versus it's good for the soil or it's good for, you know, generations to come, we'll be able to farm the land. All of that is too far. So I think communication is such a big part of the food system because it's so emotional. So we need to get it right.
And there's a lot of communication going in the opposite direction. You know, lots of information which is trying to sort of say, you know, there's nothing wrong, everybody get on with your lives as normal. You know, there's, you know, we can fix it with technology. You know, we don't need to change anything. Anyone who's telling you that we do need to change anything is wrong. And
Yeah,
so
there's very loud voices. Yeah, it's true. But at the same time, I think again this year, certainly. So right, I'm in Munich and Switzerland, southern Germany, Austria. We've had crazy floods this year. when you're looking at the storms that are hitting the US this year, also Vietnam on the other side. So we are, I think, everybody's waking up to, okay, things are really changing. Or that's my hope anyway. I'm an optimist, even in this realm of incredibly different and extreme weather events. But at some point, we have to ask ourselves, is it really okay? And is there nothing more that I can do?
I
and
think
I'm hoping that will work.
Perhaps a generational thing, and I think as time goes on, although we don't really have great deal of time to fix things, do we? So as the EIT you sort of bring together a variety of stakeholders and from academia, industry and startups, what are the biggest benefits and challenges of facilitating such diverse collaborations? And how do these partnerships accelerate innovation? So essentially, what is the biggest thing that you do to help to bring people together? If you had to kind of say, we do this and that's why you should contact us, then what would that be?
I think it's one, just connecting you to others that you wouldn't normally talk to. So that's great. So we saw it with a think tank. Those are actors that don't usually communicate that we bring together, and we're there to help those discussions then be driven forward. It can be really tangible things as well. So if we're staying in that startup realm, right, in my role, the corporate startup collaborations is in a clear fit there, helping both sides to drive their innovation, to scale it faster, to drive the sustainability agendas that you have, to discover new ideas. So all of that, we're that facilitator in between. Same with those startups being connected throughout EIT Fan to research institutes, to universities. Again, you have that win-win. So we're able to create that. Those think tanks, and there's a lot more than protein diversification. There's a healthy aging one. There's packaging coming up. So there's lots of different topics there. And then we also, right, we have the co-funding. So that's if you already have a consortium, that for us, we want to drive the system forward. So it always needs to be different people coming together from at least two countries and different parts, right? So you need to have a university and a corporate, for example, and a research institute. So you can't have just three universities coming together. So we need to have that diversity in terms of the projects that come in. We can help you put that together in a way that is really like a strong case, and then we can fund or co-fund a lot of that work. And so actually the success rate also of coming to EIT Food is a lot higher than in other places. So we have a 36% success rate at the moment of getting those projects funded, and gave out 18 million euros already this year in terms of those projects. So that's obviously a really key driver of things, right? At the end of the day, money is a big driver. And so it's really creating those connections, bringing those people together, and then also supporting them going forward, whether that's with our presence in that convener role, whether that's with money, but also then that connection, for example, to the MEPs of the European Commission.
So what are you finding? We were talking about in the early, about three or four years ago, there was an awful lot of money going into this sector, or kind of novel foods and plant-based foods and that sort of thing, and that kind of dried up a little bit, hasn't it? So have you found that your services are more vital because of the lack of private funding?
Yes, I think we've seen, well, there's various things that come together, right? It's not just because the rest is different. We with every year, we're more experienced with what we do, and we have more and more stories to back that up, that what we do well. So that is being seen. There's also more and more startups, for example, we've supported that help spread the word. But certainly we've also ramped up our investment activities, and we're seeing, it's again coming back to my role, that actually in the corporate side, we've had a little bit of a shift in mindset from this, we have to invest and we have to do M&A and acquire startups, which takes many millions of euros, to, we can partner with them and we want to be a good partner for them and create those wins-wins. And that needs a lower budget, which is really great. And so we've seen many, actually on the corporate side, many professionalize the way they're working, build those teams out further. And then really come our way for one, the access to those startups, that fantastic ecosystem we have, more than 6,000 startups in Europe, but also that knowledge that we have on how they can be a good partner and really build that out. So there's a number of different angles to this. But yes, we are able to support in many different ways.
Okay, so when it comes to investment, how do you decide where to allocate your resources? Is there, I mean, obviously you're kind of looking at it to see whether it's going to succeed, whether it's going to make money, but you know, what are the kind of particular things you look out for with new stuff?
So obviously, so investment now, right? So we're in the startup investment, like investing in startups. Yes. Okay. Perfect. So for us, again, our pipeline are the startups in our programs, right? So that already narrows down that pool, and those already are seen by many experts before they land in the program. So it's a really thorough step before they're in there. Once they're in there, for us, it's really about again having that impact, being novel, the technology, and always the team is really important, as well as kind of, you know, if it, yeah, the what they've already done, the track record within there. And then perhaps also now and then there's geographies where we think, okay, over here, this topic really makes enormous amount of sense. But we have a really nice diversified portfolio in that sense. In terms of topics, yeah, it's all agri-food topic. But I think we are seeing a few that are capturing our attention at the moment. So one I mentioned earlier already, chocolate. Or chocolate alternatives, right? The supply chain is going through a huge hit and we don't see it recovering very quickly. So we will need alternatives, as well as those alternative fats. You already mentioned it, alternative fats and sweeteners, making foods healthier, stepping away from some of the unsustainable ways that we're doing some of these activities. So those are things that we really love at the moment. And then looking a little bit further into the future, where that connection to health is really interesting, right? Food is health. If we eat healthier, also, you know, with the probiotics, postbiotics, gut health, all of that is linked to how we eat. And then you're coming really close to that farmer piece. And then it becomes difficult in terms of claims, in terms of backing up that it is really better for you, that it has almost that medicinal value, but it's just food. So we're keeping a close eye on that because we see a lot of potential in that, but we'll need to see how it's driven. And I think that really needs consumers actually that say, yes, I will buy those products. And yes, I believe in this. Or also, yes, I can feel that change because I am now healthier. I'm giving my body what it needs. But I think that's that intersection of food and health is one we're keeping a close eye on.
Okay. Well, I've got one more question for you before we wrap up. I mean, it's sort of more of a broad question, really. So, with all the knowledge you have there, what do you think in regards to sort of precision fermentation, lab grown alternatives, and plant based foods, and all the different types of food that we could have in the supermarkets in the future? What do you think we're going to see in about 5 or 10 years? Which are going to be, you know, which are going to make it, and which do you think might fall at the third or fourth hurdle?
I think not even that far in the future, because we're starting to see them are those chocolate alternatives and those sugar reduced foods. And it's a really silly one because I also the Future Food Tech, right? There was the booth from ReSugar, for example. They have a sugar alternative, and then you try a biscuit and it tastes a delicious biscuit. And that's how it should be, because it shouldn't taste any different because there's less sugar in there, but you don't taste it. And that's exactly how it should be. And I think we'll get that coming on the shelves without us even kind of necessarily knowing that much about it. Obviously you will if you read the label, but it will just taste different, it'll be better for you. So I think
what's the company that makes the sugar alternative? What's their name?
That was ReSugar from Israel that I mentioned just now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that's those ingredient substitutions to make it healthier and better for us. We'll see that come through as B2B, right? So they're just as ingredients from the same brands that you love at the moment. I think we have a chance there of making them healthier for us. And then on the alternative protein side, of course, regulation is that big barrier, same as scaling and pricing. I think on the scale side, many technologies are getting there. And then I'm intrigued to see what will happen if regulation, first of all, I know many startups are waiting on their approval. Personally, I'm hoping that once, a few are out there, maybe we get that process a little bit faster. And I'm excited to have all mycelium on the shelves. So those plant-based alternatives that are based on those rooting structures of mushrooms, I think there's huge potential there. And right now, yeah, regulation is stopping them, but I would like to see them more on the shelf.
Does EIT, because you mentioned earlier that you have a connection to the European Commission. Does EIT have any, I mean, influence is the wrong word, obviously, but I mean, can you help with the process at all?
So we can create dialogue. So we can't, right? We're not there to write your novel food applications with you or to have that pushed through faster. So that's not what we can do. But what we can do is connect to those decision makers and help them understand what some of those new technologies are. And so we do that. I mean, I mentioned it a few times now, but that protein diversification think tank, for example. But we also have a startup kind of advisory group that we get together and we hear from them what they see, because startups are always at that forefront of those new things. And so we then take what we hear there and bring that to the relevant MEPs as well, in direct consultations, in white papers, in different formats. But to really, so what we are able to do is to bring in that dialogue, bring in those connections, to hopefully whatever is coming in the future will enable those new technologies and those things that are really great for environment and people and planet to be adopted faster.
Yeah, I've heard one of the big problems at EFSA is them understanding the technology.
Yeah, well, it's exactly that, right? These are brand new things. And those startups have been doing it for a few years. And now it's other people looking at them. So if we can build that dialogue at the beginning, I think it's really good for all of us.
Yeah, I think there's only one company so far that's applied for regulatory approval in Europe. So I've heard on the grapevine, but maybe
I would say it's a few more.
I'm talking
Or at least novel foods for
I'm
sure.
talking about some cultivated
Yeah.
specifically, yeah.
Yeah, okay, fair. Different. Because certainly on the mycelium side,
Oh yeah, there's
there's quite a few, and yeah, there's various ones out there.
okay. Well, thank you so much, Marie, for agreeing to come and join me on the Future of Foods interviews and
Great.
I hope to hear more of your work and of the work of EIT in the future. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.